Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today, we're going to be speaking on the topic redefining Africa's relations with member states, countries towards trade and peaceful coexistence. I'm joined by Desmond Omoluru, a PhD candidate in economics and finance at the University of Warsaw. Desmond is also securities and derivatives settlement analyst at Citibank Europe. Desmond, I'm very pleased to have you join me today, and I look forward to a wonderful conversation.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Thank you very much.
Great. Let's start off. We've seen efforts by in Africa towards integrating trade, integrating, you know, different aspects. We've seen it with the African Union 2063 agenda. We've also seen at the different regional level, we've seen several efforts. What is the state? Let's start off. What is the state of integration, trade, and other kind of political, but let's focus on the trade and economics now in Africa. What is the state of economic integration or cooperation in Africa?
Well, so the thing is, basically, to be honest, when it comes to trade, we are not really integrated. It is known that African countries even trade more with European partners and American partners and Asian partners more than they trade with themselves. So the tariff between African countries are actually higher than the tariffs which are placed with other trading partners. And that's why the African Continental Free Trade Agreement was launched in order to integrate trade with African countries. And basically, it's a process which they are still trying to work on, but it's proposed that it should integrate trade between Africa, and more than just integrating trade, it is also proposed that it should bring African countries together, and it is even proposed that at a later date it will be the African countries will come together to see how this agreement has actually worked and even propose what we have similar to what we have in Europe, which is a custom union. So basically, we are hoping that the African Continental Free Trade Agreement would actually integrate more than just trade, but bring African countries together. And we are also seeing some improvement in that with some countries like Ghana, which have just recently launched a visa-free travel for all African countries. We also have that with Seychelles. We have that with the Gambia. We have that with Benin Republic and one other country as well. So like about five African countries now have this, and we are hoping that this should be something that is more rampant.
Very interesting. You've mentioned something about African countries trade more with European partners and all of that. We had a podcast yesterday, and that podcast we were looking at the topic we were definitely looking at the anti-French narrative. And when I was asking the guest the last question, I say, how does he see the future of African countries, former French colonies, taking charge of that destiny. And but he did mention something that I want to take you on. He mentioned something about cooperation at the he's mentioned something short of talking about Pan-Africanism. So he was more critical of the bilateral approach to it, that no single country can do it by themselves. It has to be, and you know, if you tie that into what you how your opening line about African countries trade more with this. So it does appear that Africans need to cooperate together. So I have this framework like the African free trade that you just mentioned. I think it was signed in 2018, and you've mentioned the visa free. What other aspects? Now, if let me claw back. What are the barriers to the realization of this? Obviously, we see there's an ambition there with African free continental free trade. There's the desire if you look at it from that level. But what are the barriers to facilitating?
Yeah, so just like every trade agreement and trade with other countries, there are barriers which would be a stumbling block or which would make it harder to trade with one another. And considering that Africa is a country, is a continent which has a lot of ethnic diversity, there are different languages which are being spoken. There's also one fundamental barrier which it's prevalent when it comes to trade with Africa, and that's what we call transportation. Transportation is a very, very huge barrier, because if we look at African countries today, aside from the visa-free travel mandate which has been provided by some of this country, there is still the issue of transportation. So it's, first of all, the facilities which are supposed to be there for movement of these goods and services are not readily available. Even the facilities for the people to travel. Imagine someone living from Nigeria and traveling to Ghana, which is just close by. It's very expensive. So transportation is expensive, and also the easy movement of goods and services are not readily available. And we have a case in Nigeria where the last administration was, Buhari administration was building a train with Niger. These are some of the things that we should see more in terms of closing up the barriers with African trade. And there are also other technical barriers to trade which are also there, which are also impacting and hindering the free movement of goods and services within African countries. So this, I would say, is one of the biggest barrier, aside from language, because in European Union, in the European countries, not all the countries speak English, but they are able to close up that barrier because they have free movement, they have good transportation, and they have a generalized framework of the standard of goods which they want in their country. So if African countries can look into this and try to pay attention to this, it's going to be something that would impact and revolutionize trade in African countries.
In looking at how what Africans need to do, because there's been a question of infrastructure in terms of connections of these countries to one another. I think I've heard where, I don't know if it's ECOWAS, they're saying there's some kind of like road network that have been built within that. Now, you mentioned about Africans trading externally. And we've seen where one of the things as well is diversifying. So I want to bring it to ordinarily or traditionally, African partners have been Europeans. And the kind of relations have always been in terms of like maybe foreign aids and stuff like that. But in the last couple of years, we've been seeing Africa diversifying and having partnership with China. Let me focus on China now. And China has been involving, I've maintained a different kind of approach. So they've been involved in more infrastructural aid or development, helping Africa to build that infrastructure stuff. But again, while that is going on, there's also a lot of people have been looking at calling for caution or looking at whether Africa is mortgaging its future by dealing with China. So how do you see China's role in, especially looking at within its Belt and Road Initiative, how do you see China's role in helping Africa connect each of these countries in Africa through infrastructure development? Because definitely you've mentioned transportation, which is a very strong barrier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically, the thing about when it comes to dealing with international countries is that one thing I will always advocate for is dealing, when it comes to dealing with international countries, is your interest. What interests are you looking at? What interests are African countries looking at? And what interests do the Chinese partners have? You have to make sure that if those interests align and they are something that you can actually live with, because you wouldn't want the case whereby we are borrowing money and we can't pay back and some of our assets have been taken up. So we have to understand that while we are dealing with these people, we have an interest and we have a target. Dealing with the Chinese partners might not necessarily be a problem if we can see the future benefit of this. For instance, if the Chinese are helping us with a loan in order to build our infrastructure and our railway and transportation system, it's a good benefit for the country. But if it is something that you know you are going into, or any African country is going into when it comes to dealing with the Chinese partners, and basically they cannot see any future benefit in that in order to pay up the loan, then it's a problem than a solution. So it's all about interests. Chinese people, we can deal with the Chinese partners and they can help us to build those infrastructures which are connecting African countries together. And when it comes to our synergies in transportation system and also in any infrastructure which we would want to build, and then we can benefit from that. And it's a good benefit for us, regardless of whether it's Chinese or whether it's the US or whether it's any trading partner.
I agree with you completely. I've always said that there's no intervention that is altruistic. Every intervention has interest, and when we accept that, then we can then align interests and look at that. I agree with you 100%. But speaking of Africans themselves and how Africa can prosper, again, Africa has been known to be a continent that is just more focused on raw materials rather than, you know, finished goods. So if Africa is going to trade among itself or between itself among itself, and you know, usually it's one which whose economies, most African countries are, the economies are reliant on raw materials. How is that going to help in integrating the continent and helping them prosper trade wise or economic wise?
Yeah, so in terms of African trade as well, like I mentioned, we trade more with European partners than ourselves. But one thing I also did not mention is that most of our trade, aside from oil, is agricultural products. In fact, I'm working on African Continental Free Trade Agreement as my PhD dissertation, and I can hardly find data when it comes to services. So we have little trade in terms of services, and we have, aside from oil, we have more trade in terms of agricultural products. So in order to deal with this issue of trading more with raw materials, we are also looking at a situation whereby African countries can begin to produce finished goods. And that's on a long-term plan. It's not something that can be achieved in a short-term plan. But what we can do in a short-term plan in order to get to the production of finished goods is to improve our processing of these goods. So in production line, there are a lot of processes which takes place in terms of producing the finished goods. And basically, today, with the global value chain, you don't have to produce the raw material in one country, produce the finished goods in one country. You can spread your production line to improve economies of scale. So if African countries can look into that when it comes to production of raw material, we don't have to be producing the finished goods, at least in the short run. So we can spread our production line. any country who has comparative advantage can produce this particular good to this stage, and then the other stage can be in another another African country, and then another production stage can be in another African country. And then when we can be able to do this, then we can then start to look at producing finished goods, because that's in the long run. But another thing is when it comes to services, in order to be able to improve services, connectivity is also needed, because I should be able to, if I'm going to be producing a service to an African country, I should be able to freely move to that country. It should be less of an expense for me to move into that country. And also, we also need to look at improving the human capital resources. And in order to improve the human capital resources, Africa is a country with an increase in population. In fact, in Asia and other European countries, the population in future is set to decrease, but Africa is still going to be increasing. It means we are going to be having more people on the planet. And how do we cater for these people? We need to look at how we are going to improve the human capital resources, because that's going to be beneficial for Africa, because it's going to help us when it comes to our production per unit of labor. So if one person is more knowledgeable in this, it's helping African country, because our unit per labor of production is increasing.
Very interesting. Now, one of the things that I've been doing, and I've been involved in a couple of projects or conversations, is energy in Africa and its relation to climate change. So we've seen that the African governments have been campaigning for some kind of like energy climate change campaign for climate change financing. And you've been seeing, you know, with the notion of the green transition into the green economy. But what I've argued, and where other people have argued as well, like Africa has contributed very little to climate change. And many of these countries are now transitioning are industrialized. But Africa is not industrialized, because for Africa to be able to get those finished goods that we're talking about, Africa needs to industrialize. It's very energy reliant, heavily dependent. So how does Africa reconcile? Should we be talking about climate change? Should we always be conversing for? Or should we say, listen, we need to industrialize, we need to have power, we have Nigeria, for instance, people don't have access to electricity. Is that the right conversation we should be having, or should we be industrializing? Can Africa advance to that level? Can it attain this without industrialization?
Yeah, so I've actually heard that a lot of times, and even just recently, there is a new loan which is coming from the World Bank, about $40 billion to African countries in order to improve their energy sector. And part of that loan, the conditions of that loan, is that it should be used for more climate energy production. So basically, the thing is that in order to get to that level, we cannot take away industrialization. We can take away industrialization. And when it comes to looking at climate change, for me, I would say there should be laws when it comes to environmental protection. African government should look at that, because we wouldn't want to have a situation whereby we're having environmental issues and disaster. And it's real. It's a real issue. But I would say we should look at it in comparison to how much we are contributing. And also, we should look at it to alternatives. So what are the alternatives to this production process that we are going to embark on? If we're having an alternative which is cheaper and an alternative which is better, then we should be going for that alternative. But if it is something that is going to be a hindrance to our growth and an hindrance to our progress, then we should not be going for that alternative. That's in my own opinion.
Very, very interesting. Again, one of the issues we've seen in Africa is that there's no one voice. And we see where more bilateral kind of like agreement And this kind of continental issues, there needs to be a one voice to champion all of these ideas. So how does the African Union, is the African Union posed to, or is it effective enough, or is it strong enough to negotiate or to steer Africa to these ambitious goals? You know, if you look at how African Union has performed, yeah. If not, what are the challenges and how can it become effective?
Yeah, so like we know there are issues with African countries. In fact, we, aside from internal issues, which were dealing with terrorist activities, there are also issues within African countries. We look at Ethiopia with Eritrea. We look at other African countries, which are actually having issues within themselves. Even the ECOWAS itself, we're having issues with Niger, Burkina Faso, and they are having to leave the ECOWAS and then forming their own Sahel Union. So these issues are there. And the one thing the African leaders need to understand is that there can be no moving forward for the continent if there is no coming together in a like-mind vision for what the future of Africa is supposed to be. Because don't forget, even the Europeans had their own issue. They had their own issue after the Second World War, and they decided that, no, we cannot continue this way. We cannot continue because war brings destruction. War brings limits to growth. And then what they decided to do, they had to form the European Union. They have to form a monetary union. So African leaders need to come, because this cannot work if there is no like-minded vision. And that's also another hindrance to the African Union and the African integration when it comes to trade and other things. So first of all, the African leaders need to understand that there has to be a like-minded vision for what the future needs to be. They also have to be what we call a goal, a plan, a target for the continent itself. And it's in terms of even issues, resolving of issues, the African Union can, like we know, we have the courts, which is an organ, part of the organs of the African Union. It should be more responsive in terms of addressing issues and not just thinking that these issues will go away by themselves or these countries can solve these issues for themselves. It can even go to the extent of having a security wing as an organ under the African Union, which can be a peacekeeping force of the African Union. And this would actually enhance the progress of the continent and togetherness of like-minded visions.
Yeah, I've always said that, you know, Africa is not the absence of all of this framework. So like what you've just, if I start with the last thing you mentioned, the African Union actually has a peace framework. They have the APSA, African Peace Security Architecture. They have the African Court of Human Rights. They have all of these frameworks. But you look at what is the issue? Is it having these frameworks? Why are these frameworks not working? And do we need... But then again, one of the things you will see that manning these frameworks are the same African leaders. And some of these African leaders are people that have the... I'll call them the old guards or people that... But what we're seeing now in Africa, we're seeing a kind of like revolution, even with AES, even in Mozambique, in Kenya. And if I tie that to what you're talking about, the population, the growing African population, we're seeing the growth of a teeming youth population that is far removed from the colonial narratives. And I will see them challenging some of these old guys. You see protests in Kenya, protests in Nigeria. These young youths want a better life. They have social mobility. So how does that tie into this future we're envisaging? Who are these? Are these the youths that are going to take up this? Because if you're looking for change, do you think these changes are hampered by the crop of leaders we have? And do you think there's a change? If you look at what happened in Senegal, if you look at what's going on in Burkina Faso, even if it's a military regime, that's a young pricing. Do you think that the change is already happening? Do you think the youth is that going to be the ones to actually champion this change?
Yeah, so just like you said, we still have these leaders who are still there, and they are the ones actually heading this organization. So basically, there will be little to no change because they still have the same mindset. But with a growing youth population, with a growing transition of government, we can see this also in elections in Kenya and some of these African countries also. We can see that there's a growing youth population and there's a growing distaste for lack of good governance in Africa. So we are hoping that with this, actually, this can actually push the African leaders in each of their countries to seek for change, because it's the willingness. The leaders are still having the lack of willingness in order to drive this growth, in order to drive this. Because even with the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, some of the ratification which has been done by some of this country are still not even fulfilled. So there is no willingness, and we need that willingness. And also what can improve that willingness is working with private partners. So public-private partnership can also help to increase and improve that willingness and that drive from government. Because the funny saying, like we used to say in Nigeria, once the government comes into anything, that's when it's problematic. So we always want the private partners to be the ones which are driving this. So I would say that would also help to improve that willingness. But we are seeing this lack of willingness because we still have these old people who are there. So by the time they start to leave and with the transition in government, then we can begin to see some changes.
Speaking of public-private partnership, speaking of public-private partnership, let's talk about Nigeria. You mentioned Nigeria. And we see the downstream oil sector. So we've seen where there's been a exponential increase in the pump oil price. But then again, we've started seeing where Dangote refinery is working now. Some of the refineries are working. But that hasn't really reflected on the market price of fuel. Or the change of scene. So does that cast some kind of shadow on the benefit or on the hope of a public-private partnership? Or is it just a Nigerian case that is just exceptional?
I would say regarding that, I would say no. Because if we look at the issue, I would say in my own view, it doesn't cast a shadow in terms of public-private partnership. I would say that's just a political issue which has political interest by some people who are in government. Because if we should look at it, previously we were paying landing costs in terms of petrol, and the petrol price was not even up to that what we are seeing today. And now we are having refineries who are producing in Nigeria, and they are also increasing the price and talking about landing cost for production which is done in the same country. So we would know that that's just basically political interest and political things that are at play. Because don't forget the issue also with Dangote, Dangote himself having squabbles with the petroleum sector and the Minister of State of Petroleum. And we would know that basically there are some things in play which we might not know. But I would say it doesn't cast the damping effect of private-public partnership, because at least with this, we can now see the readiness of government even wanting to fix other refineries. Like we can see, unlike before, whereby we are being told these refineries will be done at this date, but they are not done. We can now see that with this, it has jolted up the interest of government to want to do something about the oil sector and the refineries. So I would say it doesn't dampen the profitability of public-private partnership.
One of my I don't know if you agree. So this is going to be a question of whether you agree and if you can expand on that. The reforms we've had in Africa, and I can speak on Nigeria more confidently, is many of the changes, especially in the last Fourth Republic, in the last 20-something years since Nigeria has returned to democracy, is one that are externally driven, whether it be it in the extractive industry, in the oil, whether it be it's in the financial industry. You'd be surprised to find out that EFCC, the formation of EFCC, is one that was driven externally. Whether it be it's in the formation of macroeconomic policies like doing Obasanjo, we had need, we had seed, all of these policies were policies like even what Tinubu is doing right now. Some of these policies are policies that are driven by IMF, World Bank, either to get debt relief or to get more loans. So do you think that, and we've seen over the years, that has not brought prosperity or brought change to Africa. Do you think that change for Africa to integrate, that change has to be internally driven, has to be won? And do you think that has already started happening with what we're seeing in the Sahel, with you know, people trying to take that destiny and, you know, booting French out or ostracizing or extricating that relationship between African and the former colonies? Do you agree with this? And, you know, what is your take on it?
Yeah, so basically the thing is, first of all, the interest has to be there internally with the African countries. They have to know that this is the plan, this is what we are working towards. IMF and the World Bank are basically going to give their own their own division or their own insight on things that they see and how they want things to be, because they are the one giving the loans, right? If I'm the one giving you the money, I can also make some things, tell you some things that I want you to do if since I'm the one giving you this. It doesn't necessarily mean that some of them are dangerous or some of them are a hindrance to the growth of Africa. Some of them could be, some of them could not be. If we look at the situation of removal of subsidy, don't forget that this has been a case whereby the World Bank has been telling and the IMF has been telling Nigerians that these had to be removed at a longer period of time, like in the past, not recently, because the longer we delay, the longer the problem is going to be. And even the removal of subsidy, it shouldn't have just been done abruptly like that. There are things that should have been put in place in order to make sure that the effect is not so much on the people. So the issue about the World Bank giving some pointers on what they want African countries to do in terms of the loan that they are giving, that is not going to change. They are going to be giving those plans that they want the African countries to follow. What the African countries should do is to know and have their own plan for what they want, their own vision and their own interest. And it's just the same thing we're talking about with working with international partners. What interests do you have to gain from this? What interest does the partner have to gain from this? And if our interests align, then we can work together.
One of the key things you've said is African governments need to have their own vision and their own plan. And that also goes well into the concept of the structural adjustment programs that we've had from the 80s, and where we started seeing less of government state intervention and say more market economy, more free tariffs and all of that. So which have tied down to not necessarily the absence or the efficacy of democracy, but maybe liberal, hold on a minute, hold on, yeah. I think we might be able to, yes, so one of the things we saw with liberal democracy, and coming back to what you were talking about World Bank, IMF driven this thing, is more liberalization, opening of the market economy. But I've always argued, if you saw my last book, which I was looking at Nigeria's Fall Republic and Trans-Democracy, I was arguing that there are different systems. If you come to Europe, you know, there's the parliamentary democracies. You go to America, it's different. So Africa, like really said, needs to be in charge, determine and define their own kind of like system. But then again, in doing that, a lot of people, like you were mentioning traveling to Ghana, which, you know, kind of like experience, sometimes to travel within Africa, you need to first make a stop in Europe or in Asia or whatever, and then come to that same, and then that adds to the amount that you have to pay, and also add to climate change. So I guess the question is, can you totally separate? Can you put this blame, if we want to say, on Africa and its leaders, or do you think the external? How much role does the external government or external international partners, however I want to put it, play in keeping Africa where it is or co-opting Africa in a way where it is right now? Because I don't, if you ask me that question, I don't think with the crop of leaders we have that Africa, there's going to be that much change. So how much do you think Africans have that lever, that leverage, that power, that independence to be able to take their future, take whatever it is in their hands? Or are their hands tied?
Yeah. So it's, I think it does draw back to the question of, did Europe underdevelop Africa or Africa underdevelop Africa? Mm-hmm. More like the same question. But mm-hmm. what I would say in that is, there is no doubt that basically international partners would want an interest, and they would want to have a take of things in Africa, natural resources. We can even see that in the Congo, whereby there's fighting for natural resources. And this is actually for international companies to come and draw from. And just recently, there was a case against Apple by one of the African countries that they were using child labor. So there is no doubt that those countries and those foreign organizations will want to have a piece of the cake. But the thing about that is that basically, I see it more like me in my home and me giving allowance for that to happen. Because there is no way those things can happen without someone inside collaborating with them. We see the case of Zamfara, the illegal mining of gold. Mm. We can see that some people were accused as Nigerians collaborating with those foreign organizations. So there is no doubt that someone inside is still giving that support for these things to continue. So it still go back to what we're talking about African countries drafting their own plan for what they want. I cannot be giving support for someone to come and kill for the country, and yet I'm complaining that these things are not working. So we have to draft out our plan. And it's just go back to the same thing I was saying with the European Union. Like after the World War, there were also issues that they had. At that time, the US, that was when the rise of the US, United States began. So the European Union have to draft out the plan that this is what they want, and we cannot let any other country or someone outside of the European Union to determine for us. So African countries and African leaders need to come together. But just like we're saying, these are still the same old guys. So we might have little changes, but we need to start from somewhere. And I think most of them are already realizing that. And that's why we can see the transition of government in some of these countries. It even got to a stage whereby even Nigeria were scared that we're going to have a coup d'etat. So I'm sure they are realizing that something needs to be changed. And it also has to deal with the increase in population, because when you are having, in Nigeria, for instance, we have a high youth unemployment, and that's a natural disaster waiting to happen. So it's a ticking time bomb. So when you have those people who are not doing anything, they say, and I do mind the devil's workshop. Mm. So people are going to be devising plan for things to be done. So if the leaders do not take charge now, then they are only prolonging the bomb to happen in the future. So African leaders need to sit down. They need to come together. International organizations will come, and they would also have their own interests. But you need to define your plan. That's why you need to work with people who are also going to work for the progress of Africa. It's not saying that you cannot work with international organizations, but working with those organizations and those partners which are in line with your vision and interest.
Since you've already started on this recommendation, so I think we should conclude by looking at maybe expand more on how African government, you've already started, so we might as well just conclude the podcast on that, note. How can Africa improve relations between among itself to achieve some of these things that we've mentioned? We've mentioned some of these things, but what more can be done in terms of like the African continental free trade? How can it be further enhanced at the regional level? We've seen ECOWAS, we've also seen SODOC, we've seen all of this regional government. What more can be done? Infrastructure, youth population. You know, I'm just giving you a broad range to look at what can be done, and what do you see in the short, medium to long term? So I wanted to conclude on that now.
Okay, so basically, just as we have been saying, there are a lot of things which can be done, and the two major sectors which the government need to look at is energy and transportation, because nothing can be done or significant change cannot be achieved without these two sectors. We need to address the issue of energy, and we need to address the issue of transportation. Transportation, not just linking African countries together, but also transportation, which is revolutionary in the sense that it aids the movement of goods and services within and between African countries. And also tackling non-tariff barriers, because aside from the tariff barriers which African countries have against themselves, we also have the non-tariff barriers. And these are, according to the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, they classify non-tariff barriers as import cost, administrative cost, sanitary and phytosanitary measures. So in order to address these challenges and these issues, we need to look at how can we address, for instance, importing of goods into the country. We know how tedious it is when it comes to importing, aside from the tariff. Even in Nigeria, to clear something at the port, it takes a lot of time. It also takes expenses. We imagine in Nigeria, we have the major port in just one location, which is Lagos, and you have to import in Lagos. Meanwhile, you are supposed to be sending these goods to Port Harcourt. So having another port there reduces your import costs in terms of transiting those goods down to a different location. So what we also need to do, African countries need to do, is what I call establishing a standardized framework of safety measures and what we call standardization framework. So having a single framework of standard of goods which you want in the country. It can also go into achieving or creating what we call a unified custom system. So we can have a unified custom system whereby everything is done together, so we know that this is the same standard that applies in Nigeria, this is the same standard that applies in Ghana, this is the same standard that applies in Kenya, this is the same standard that applies in Egypt or any other African country. And you know that once you are importing or exporting to these countries, it's the same standard that applies. That already is, these are already limiting the non-tariff barriers to trade. Also, having a unified customs system improves the administrative process of clearing goods. So it makes it much more faster. And the faster you can get your goods, the more cheaper they can be for you and also for your end users, because you're going to be having, you're going to be reducing the price at the market. So it means people will be buying the goods cheaper. So these are part of the things which the government needs to look at, and also education system, because like I said, we are having a growing youth population. How do we transition this into something that will be beneficial for us? Imagine we have the population which are more learned than they are right now. It means that our production per unit of labor is also increasing. And how can we do this? I'm not just talking about maybe giving support to some community, giving kekenape, giving some sewing machines. No, I'm talking about revolutionizing the education sector in terms of updating the curriculum into what we have today. What are they teaching them in computer science? Are you still talking about floppy disk, or you're talking about people going to space, teaching them about the internet, the changes in the internet as which applies to today? And also, like, you also have to be, what would I call it now? You also have to look at having qualified teachers in these schools which are going to be teaching these children. By doing this, you're already improving the children of tomorrow, which is going to be beneficial for your country and also for Africa as a whole.
I'm glad you finished on that note. I was going to actually say, I was tempted to mention that last part, but I said, let me wait and see. I'm glad that educational system is, that you mentioned that point. That is very, very key to the success of Africa. And I've taken up some of the professors. I'm like, why are we still talking about the Mungo Park curriculum? And also, I also challenged some of the educational elite, the professors, they are part of the people that are keeping Africa where Africa is. So I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm very, very grateful.
One last thing to even add as well that I just remembered, because I remember that even coming to Europe, I had to has one of the cultural shock in terms of education system was that they're more focused on practical than theory. Basically, if we can also transition the education system to having people do this practically so that they can see how it is done on the field, that would also improve knowledge.
Most definitely.
And even transfer of knowledge, transfer of technical knowledge between African countries, whereby you can learn from this, from what we are doing. Maybe we can learn from Egypt. Egypt can learn from us. We see some presidential candidates going to Egypt to see what they did at the energy sector, which can be imputed and applied also in Nigeria. So this also helps as well.
Brilliant. Desmond, I really enjoyed this conversation. I'm grateful once again. Sorry for the mix up in the time. This is wonderful. And I'm very optimistic about that change. And I think the African youth are waking up to that challenge, and we can always just stay positive. But thank you once again for joining me, and enjoy your weekend.
Thank you very much for having me, and you too. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, cheers.
Bye.
Thank you once again for tuning in to another exciting episode. As usual, join me to thank our guest, Desmond Omoluru, for his wonderful commentary and insight into how African nations can collaborate and cooperate effectively towards trade and to guarantee the prosperity of Africa. Stay tuned for more episodes and join me next week for another episode. For now, stay blessed, and I'll see you soon.